Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We don't necessarily panic here because everybody already has like a stash for the second coming of Jesus Christ. Welcome to Manic Rambling Spiral. I am Heather B. Armstrong.
And I am John R. Bray.
I am holding an ice pack to my left eye.
Yeah. Bar fight.
I'm officially a walking disaster. I'm a dumpster fire, actually. Like, that's basically a walking dumpster fire is what I am right now.
A walking dumpster fire. It does need to be said that the reason that you are a walking dumpster fire, at least in part, is that you've been recording your own book and realizing what you wrote and, we'll just say, moderately crying excessively.
Yeah, we can talk about that for a second. They booked me for 4 days at a studio downtown, and there's a woman in New York who is sort of coaching me as I go along, and there's a sound guy that I'm working with at this studio in Salt Lake, and I'm in a studio setting. I'm in a little room, and I'm reading my book out loud.
Yeah. It's almost like you're having to actually face the words by saying them out loud, like acknowledge that they're there.
Yeah. You know, I've read the book several times, but that was a few months ago because I've been doing so much else since then. There is a very different way of writing for probably screenplays than books. Because when you start to read books out loud, certain sentences become really, really complicated to get out, like, coherently.
Oh, yeah. You start tripping over them, especially, like, those longer sentences that are fine grammatically. They're just really hard to read.
Yeah. Like, especially the sentences that contain all the scientific words.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Oh, yeah. That would be fun.
Like, I'm trying to pronounce an anesthetic, and it's called isoflurane, but sometimes it's called isoflurane. And, like,
wow.
I kept tripping up on fentanyl. You're supposed to call it fentanyl, not fentanyl. Opioid. I kept tripping up on that. There was a lot of sentences that I had to read literally, like, I'm not kidding, like 40 times in order to get it out.
Holy, wow.
And then I would go like on the pages where I'm writing about my feelings and my relationships and like what I'm going through, like those, I would go through 10 pages without like missing a word. Like I would just come out of me.
Which makes sense. I mean, that was the natural part of your story.
Yeah, that was the natural part of it. I would get into those pages and it would be really easy for me to read. But then I started to like remember what it felt like. And there are parts where I'm like, who wrote this fucking book? Because I'm like, at one point I was like, excuse me, I just need to, like, and I turned to the side and I just like quietly sobbed in that little room to myself. Like, there's just like the parts like between me and my mom that I just couldn't, like, it took me a while to get through. And they let me keep the emotion in my voice. So there's a lot of emotion in my voice.
So people are going to really,
they're gonna feel it because I couldn't help but feel everything that I felt when all of those words happened in, like, I mean, I wrote the words, but when those words actually occurred, like, all of that emotion came just flooding back, especially given the last month and a half of my life. And yeah, it's been a hard couple of days just because of that. Like, I was in the studio for like 9 hours each day reading.
That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot of just, I mean, that's a lot of speaking in general, even if you're not reading your own book.
Yeah.
And then you woke up to 2 feet of snow. So
and today, okay, so I'm week. About to post this to Instagram. So I was supposed to go see my nephew come home from his mission. It's a big deal.
Like a big, he's been gone two years?
2 years, yeah.
Okay. And you haven't seen him at all since?
No.
Wow.
Someone returning from a mission is a big, big, big deal. And we were all supposed to go, but we woke up to literally, like, it's still snowing. There's more than 2 feet on the ground. Nothing has been plowed. I looked at Uber. There are no Ubers available. So I was just like, Mom, I don't think that we're going to be able to get out of our neighborhood to even get food. So they called a snow day. For the first time in the 16 years that I have lived in Utah, they called a snow day. For the first time.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he even managed to fly in.
Well, so Salt Lake City is probably one of the most prepared airports when it comes to snow. Salt Lake Airport, this is technical, sorry. It sits right next to the lake. And do you know about lake effect snow?
Oh, yes, because I grew up right on the shore of Lake Superior, so we would get a shitload of lake effect snow.
We have lake effect snow not that often, but when we do, it just slams us. And the airport sits right there. So the airport is really equipped to deal with this. More than any other airport, I think, probably in the country, we deal with snow. So he came.
But then basically once you're there, they're like, you're on your own. We can get you into the building. That's all we promise.
We're not paying the TSA agents. You can take in that water bottle and that razor.
Oh God.
My mother just sent the this sort of ties into me talking about my book because I wrote about this. She sent me a video of, his name is Britton, and he's like 6'4" and he's just this beautiful, blonde, hulking football player for BYU, and he comes down the elevator. It's a thing at the airport. You have to understand that at Salt Lake City International Airport, missionaries come home, and there are always, like, a thunderous amount of people there to greet these missionaries. And it's always fun to come home, like, from a trip and to see people there standing with signs. Elder Henderson, Elder Hedengren, Elder Christensen. And like sometimes what I would do is like I would come down the elevator and wait just to see what would happen when the missionary would come home. And like the screaming of their names and like the clapping and the crying and the hugging. You know, they've been gone for 2 years.
Right. Wow.
And Britton.
And elder, I mean, excuse the ignorance, but that's just.
Elder.
Is that a term they earn?
What the? Oh my God, I didn't realize. Yeah, elder is the term that they use to call missionaries. Like when you receive a certain, when you achieve a certain level of the priesthood, you're called an elder.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, when you receive the priesthood, so you're a priest?
No.
I guess that makes sense.
No. You just receive the power of the priesthood.
Ah, okay.
Like you're able to give blessings, you're able to bless things. There are certain levels of the priesthood that you achieve. And so when you go on your mission, you achieve this level where you're called an elder. So Elder Hogan, Elder Britton Hogan came home today. And I'm sorry for hijacking this. I apologize to the people who are like, this format doesn't work. Heather talks too much.
Oh, there are those people, yeah.
Sorry. there's a lot going on. So Elder Hogan came home today, and my mom sent me just now before I got on the phone with you, a video of him coming down on my sister hugging him. And it's no secret.
And you cried.
Did I cry? Of course I cried.
Oh yeah.
I sobbed. I like watched it 10 times and I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. It's no secret that Britton is my sister's favorite kid, right? he's her baby boy. Oh, you know? And she hugged him, and I just recognized in the way that she like touched his face, like I recognized like how I feel about my own kids. Just the touching his face and cradling his face and like looking at him and making like pulling his head and like looking at him in the face. Britton had to, so he first sent in his papers. I talk about this in the book. He sent in his papers and was called to South Africa. But then he fell into a very, very, very severe depressive episode.
Right. I feel like you might have touched on that on the podcast mm-hmm. at one point, at least briefly.
Yeah. So he had...
And had to basically cancel.
Yeah, right? They call it deferring. So he deferred for several months until he got better and they got him to a stable place. And then he got called to San Antonio the second time he put in his papers, which was actually thrilling to my sister because she knew that if anything happened, he'd be in the country.
Right. And how does the church... I mean... Obviously, he deferred it, and it worked out, and that's great. But how do they view that? I mean, do they take something like depression seriously,
yeah.
or is it sort of an eye roll for them?
No, okay. They take it very seriously. They assess everything, and when they're called to missions, like it, basically the first presidency calls you to a mission, and they receive a revelation of where you're supposed to go. And so... Yeah, depression is an issue. Any sort of like health issue is an issue. It's like they take it into consideration and will send you to a place where you'd be able to get home quickly. Early on, he was really, 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 really depressed. And it was a lot like my brother talking about like his first companion. You have to be, so missionaries go around in twos, in pairs. And you're stuck with this yes. person like for 24 hours a day, day in, day out. For like weeks at a time, and you can't really be separated from the person. And I think like his first couple of people that he was with were just miserable, and he was really, really, really struggling.
So how do they switch out? Like did the church recognize that, you know, they weren't going to work as a pair, so they swap, or what do they do?
You swap like every I'm kind of sort of cold on this. I think you swap like the average is like every 4 to 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Like you get a new companion every 2 months or so. They move you around. So you go from like this little part of San Antonio to this part of San Antonio to this part of San Antonio. And they move you around constantly.
Wow.
And, you know, he made it. And my mother said that in the letters that he was sending home the last... like 4 weeks, he was like, you know, I made it and I'm happy I did. I made it through. I'm really, 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 really scared about coming home and what that means and like, what, where do we go from here? That type of thing.
But he's happy to be coming home?
Yeah.
Like, would he want to continue the mission work or does he want to be done?
Like, I mean, I think every missionary wants to be done with a mission. I mean, you want to come back to your life, except that you've been living this way for 2 years. Like, this is like your mission. Like, it's no pun intended. This is your mission in life for 2 years is all you do is you proselytize and you teach and teach and teach and teach the gospel. And you talk about Jesus Christ and you talk about the Book of Mormon. That's all you do. And then you come home to real life. That involves like episodes of The Bachelor that your sister is watching.
So it's the same, not that I've experienced any of this, but it would be like a researcher who goes off alone for 6 months and lives alone and then has to come back. Or mm-hmm. I mean, so I guess even incarceration to a certain point, like you're then so adjusted to that unique, very limited piece of life.
Right.
That to then come back to all of life is just weird.
Yeah. I was dating a guy who was interested in joining a church when my brother came home from his mission. A lot of people get called to South America or Latin America, and the Book of Mormon is sort of like a gift to those cultures because it's basically a book that says you are a chosen people. Like, God has chosen you, and you are here because God chose you. And
oh, I think I remember you saying that. So it's sort of an quote-unquote easy place to be a mission.
You go down and you talk about it, and people are just like, yes, 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 sign me up. And my brother went to Montreal, Canada.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Where they speak a very different kind of French called Québécois, and they speak literally like a variant of French, and they're very Catholic, and they have hatred for the idea of Mormonism. And my brother, in the 2 years that he was gone, he baptized 3 people, whereas like his roommates from college were baptizing like 400, 500 people on their missions.
So that was an uphill battle for him.
Yeah. Well, and it was really cold, very different culture. He talked about how it was so, and you can probably relate to this, given what happened. Is it still frigid there?
It's not. I mean, not compared to what it was. It's like just above freezing today. So I'll take it.
I remember him sending home a letter where he talked about how he and his companion were in the car and they were literally breathing air, and the air would turn into snow.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It was so cold. And then one day they got into their car and it was so cold that the back window of the car shattered because it just couldn't take being that cold.
Damn.
Yeah. And when he got home, we all, you know, what they do is they hold a homecoming at the church where they welcome home the missionary. And then usually you go home after church and you have everybody over and you have a potluck and everybody talks. And we were all sitting around the living room. And you have to understand that my brother was one of the most popular kids in school because of his humor. He was hysterical. People loved being around my brother. And he came back just broken in half. He was literally like, we sat and watched him and listened to him talk, and he was just broken. And suddenly just broke down in front of all of us, like started sobbing. And I'm sitting there with this person that I was dating who was interested in joining the church. And after it was over, he pulled me aside and said, I cannot be a part of any sort of institution that is going to do this to people. Sorry.
Wow.
Like, it was that severe. So,
well, at least he was perceptive enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's wild, though.
There's our Mormon lesson for the day. We got the Mormon lesson out of the way.
And, well, we have to have that. That's part of MRS.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets welcomed home with 2 feet of snow coming from Texas. So that's just awesome.
I know. That's a good point. He came home to Utah. Here's Utah, hon.
Terrible, honestly.
But you know, you had snow last week, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Everything was awful last week. It was just so cold. But it's weird because it was, I guess, Wednesday, Thursday, it was really cold. I think the lowest it got where I live was like negative 24 or 26 without the wind. So really fucking
cold. Without the wind.
Right, without the wind. But then by Saturday, it was 40. So like 65 degrees different 2 days later.
Yeah.
And it was like 45 on Sunday, and then Monday it started to dip again, and now we're back. We actually had freezing rain last night, so that was a lot of fun.
Oh God. Oh, freezing rain. Oh God, I remember that shit. Ugh.
Oh yeah. Fortunately, there were some places that were supposed to get almost a half an inch of freezing rain, and we did not. We got just enough to kind of weigh down branches and things, but by the time most people were commuting, the roads had been treated, so it was fine. But nonetheless, I'm done with this weather. It's old.
It's like literally none of the streets have been plowed. None of the, like, if there's 2.5 feet of snow in the street. Like, there were no Ubers available to take us to the airport. Like, we couldn't literally get out. It's insane.
It's weird. Whenever that happens, it always... I don't really understand why it gets to that point. Because usually, like, it starts to snow and the plows are out. And mm-hmm. they're just making the rounds and keeping up as best they can. And even if it's a huge storm, the streets, for the most part, are reasonable. But there are those storms sometimes where it's almost like they just said, fuck it. Let's just wait.
Fuck it.
Just wait until it's done.
Fuck it.
And maybe that's what it was. Maybe they just knew there was going to be so much that even if they were out, it still wouldn't have really made
a difference. Yeah, they're probably, like, waiting for, like, okay, we're just going to wait until, like, it kind of slows down because it's still snowing. It's supposed to snow all day long.
And is it snowing, like, hard?
No, it's not hard.
Okay.
But it's just accumulating. Like, sometimes you get snow and it melts on the roads. This is accumulating. Like, it's literally packing up. And I'm sure they don't want to have to, like, drive around 6 times to plow the roads. And they, like, everything is canceled. Like, Lita had dance tonight. They canceled that. My friend who does my nails canceled all of her appointments today. Nobody is driving anywhere, which is weird. You understand this. This is very weird for where we live because normally we just deal with this. Because of the density of the snow and because it's so packed up and because nothing is happening, everyone is just like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to wait it out. You know, I've got my supplies. I've got my apocalypse supplies. We're fine.
Yep. But the God, I don't understand. Like, if you really had to, if all of a sudden on a random day, someone said you have to be locked in your house for 5 days, you would all eat. It would be fine. Maybe you wouldn't eat what you want, but you have plenty of food.
Uh-huh. Like
the vast majority of people, that's true. I realize not everyone's in that position, but I went out, like I would have gone to get groceries yesterday anyway, and people are shopping like they're gonna die if they don't get food. And it's even like the most extreme forecast was that it was supposed to be done by 6 a.m. So worst case scenario, you can't leave until maybe afternoon.
Yeah.
There's no way you need that much food to survive 24 hours. I don't understand it. It just is weird. Like, people hear that they might have to be stuck somewhere for a day and panic immediately sets in. And it's the same thing every year. That's what I don't get.
We don't necessarily panic here because everybody already has like a stash for the second coming of Jesus Christ. So
I forgot about that. I'm sorry, everybody, that's not funny.
Everybody has their food storage in their basement, so we're fine.
God, that's so wild to me. I do not understand how that is a real thing.
It's a real thing. It is a real thing. Like, my father goes and volunteers and packs 72-hour kits that they give out to members of the church. 72-hour kits. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Climate scientists are recommending it, you know? Climate scientists are like, yeah, have a like 72 if not like 5 day kit on your person. Like, it's going to get that bad. So,
yeah. I mean, yes, I get it for, I guess maybe it's the reason. Like, I get it for climate, but not so much for apocalypse. It's just not, doesn't seem as urgent to me. I don't know. The fact that there are people who would prepare for the apocalypse and somehow see that as more likely than climate change, that is a whole separate topic for discussion. But come on.
Science is real. Science is real.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody in Chicago, I was going to say this earlier, tweeted that he's like, yeah, it's 30 degrees warmer than it was yesterday. It is 10 degrees outside.
Yep. And people, like, because it was so cold, when it warmed up to, like, just above zero, people were out in light jackets.
Yeah.
They weren't wearing hats because it feels amazing.
Yeah. That's the same thing that happens here. Like, it gets to, like, maybe 40 degrees and people start wearing shorts and flip-flops. They're just like, oh yeah, this is summer, man. 40 degrees, it's amazing.
It is kind of a weird phenomenon. I mean, it's the same thing here in the summer where we'll get a week where it's, you know, 98 or 100, and then it drops to high 80s, and suddenly it feels cold. Something is wrong. And it doesn't take that long for that to set in. I was just glad that school was not canceled today.
Mm-hmm.
I was really worried for the freezing rain. We had 3 days last week where all the public schools were closed. So I was pretty pleased with that.
It's kind of insane. I need that
little window.
Yeah. The fact that there were schools closed where you are and schools closed where I am, that is a thing. Like, that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't, again, this is the first time in 16 years that they called a snow day. And
yeah.
I saw the message this morning and I was like, what in the world? It's like, it's a mayor. Wow. Oh, climate change.
Right. I mean, it can't be global warming though, because it's cold out.
It's cold outside. So it can't be global.
There's snow. Warming. So everything's cool.
Mm-hmm.
No worries. So were your girls like absolutely thrilled? I mean, it's the first time in their life that there's been a snow day.
They were like shocked by the idea of it when I told them this morning. Like, I grew up with snow days. Like, they would predict an inch of snow 2 days early, and then they'd cancel school for those 2 days. And then it wouldn't snow, and we still didn't have to go to school. Like, Tennessee was like, oh yeah. It's gonna snow. So my kids were like, what? And then I told them that we weren't going to be able to go to the airport because we literally can't get out of the neighborhood safely. And they were disappointed, but, you know, they'll get to see him. They'll get to see Elder Hogan this weekend.
Elder Hogan.
Yeah.
They like him. They're close to him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a good, 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 good kid. Yeah.
Well, that's disappointing, but like you said, at least it's not like some weird 3-day visit back and then he's got to leave again. He's back, so.
He's back. He's back from his mission. He's got to get into life. He's got to determine where he's going to live and where he's going to work and all that sort of thing. So, kids.
That's a lot.
Kids.
Yeah. Yep. I'm just trying to get mine to remember to turn in his homework. That's all. It continues.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Because, you know, some people, like, if they know they're going to forget to do something, they put a rubber band on their finger or they write it on their hand. Like, people have different ways of remembering things. But Lexton is very much the type of kid who would do that, but then not remember what it was for. So it would be a waste. So what I finally did, because it got to the point, one of his two public school classes is freshman biology. And he's actually been kicking ass on all of his tests, like doing really, really well and not turning in any homework or like half completing homework or whatever. So this semester, we're now 4 weeks in, maybe.
Yeah.
He literally has a 0%. Like, I don't know. And he's gone every day. He's there every single day. He's on time. Some of the shit was done So I don't know how he lets that happen, nor do I honestly even understand how that's even possible.
Right.
I distinctly have memories of kids in classes in high school that maybe wouldn't finish a lab or something.
Right.
And they would have to stay after to finish it. Like, it wasn't, not doing it wasn't an option.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very confusing to me. But so I got him, you know, those little mini memo pads that are like 3x5 in the top spiral.
Yes.
Yeah. I got him one of those and I just started today. So it's too soon to say. I have him write the date on the top and then a list of all the key things that have to happen. And he has to have it in his pocket at all times, unless he's sitting and doing schoolwork and he wants to set it like on the desk or table.
Do you think he'll lose it?
I don't know. I made it very clear that it is to remain in the pocket. And if there is any chance that it could be forgotten, then it doesn't come out of the pocket. Like, you could set it on the desk if you're not going to lose it. He said, well, it's uncomfortable. I said, yeah, that is kind of the point, because you'll feel it and remember why it's there. And he knows it's not like a punishment, but because he is frustrated that he has so much trouble remembering, because he hasn't quite put that piece together that he's not remembering because he doesn't care to remember.
Right.
That's really what it is. It's not a memory issue. It's the memory version of selective hearing.
Right.
And I don't know if it's going to work, but I don't know what else to do. It's so frustrating to see a 0% and then he'll take a test and get an A. And that's what I'm trying to get him to see. Like, you're capable of doing this, but you're just making it so much harder on yourself.
Is it the way he learns? Is that what it comes into play here?
That's a good question. I don't think so. This has been like the most difficult piece of figuring out his learning style. Because it's just the only way that I know how to describe it is it's his learning style is interest based. And if whatever they're studying does not immediately pique his interest, he just shuts down.
Right.
He just doesn't pay attention, doesn't care, doesn't take notes. And he's not rude about it or combative about it or anything. He just shuts down.
Yeah.
And it's hard because I'm like, I hated biology. I still don't really enjoy it. I don't really like life science. But he hasn't quite realized that some parts of life suck and you still have to do them. Like, you have to find a way to get through it. And that's the piece that is missing. I mean, there's plenty of things you do in a day that you don't want to do.
Right.
That are boring or whatever, but you do them because you have to do them. And you don't have to enjoy them, you just have to do them. I feel like I'm re-giving the lecture I gave him yesterday.
Right?
Like, I'm trying to come up with every possible different way that I can say it, because then maybe one of those ways will just click. And finally I told him, I said, the other issue, I said, if you don't care, that's one thing. But I said, as your dad, I automatically have more to do than you do. And
exactly.
I said, that's fine, because I'm a parent. But when you then don't hold up your end of the bargain at all, and I have even more to do, then it's not fair to me.
Right.
I said, then it's not kind. So I said, you don't have to necessarily care about your biology, but I know you care about me, and what you're doing is negatively affecting me. And I said, that's an issue. And I do feel like that kind of, like, I feel like he honestly hadn't really thought about that.
Like, it's more than just biology, right? It's more than about just that class. It's about the whole dynamic of performing and doing what you're supposed to do, because you are sacrificing all that you do in order to get him to that class and make sure that he's learning the things he needs to learn. And it's just about that dynamic. And I'm sure a psychologist is going to come and tell us that we're wrong for all of this.
Oh, probably. I mean, yeah, I can guarantee that I'm taking the wrong approach, but that's part of parenting, is like trying to figure out what works.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, biology is like it's the current example, but I mean, he wanted an allowance, and I said, sure. So let's come up with a list. And we made a list of chores. He doesn't do them. The only way he does them is if I remind him of every single item on the day he's supposed to do it. Usually I have to remind him like 3 times. So I use that as an example too. I said, you're actually making it worse for me because I could just do it myself. Right. Rather than have to ask you 3 times. Or if I forget to ask him because I count on him to do it, then it doesn't get done. The trash didn't get taken out for 3 weeks. Three fucking weeks. Fortunately, it's just two of us, so it's not like there were mounds of excess garbage. But come on. Oh, it's this kind of shit that just, like, it just adds up.
It adds, yeah. I mean, I texted you the day that I went to pick up Marlo and she was nowhere to be found.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you did. I think that entire text message was all caps. All caps.
It was just one of those, oh, God, these weeks. I didn't expect to get a black eye this week, but there you go. These weeks, like, you have these days where it's just like, fuck. And, like, I'm literally running out of the house to go pick her up, and I drive down there and I park illegally waiting for her to come out of the building, and she doesn't come out of the building. And I have told her over and over and over and over again, you have to come out to the car, and she just likes to wander around after the bell rings, apparently. She's done this to my mother. Man. I mean,
like, literally she just walks around.
Yeah. She'll go get her lunchbox and then she'll just walk around and see if any of her old teachers are around so she can talk to them. And then, like, literally like 25 minutes later, we'll wander slowly out of the building. And I was just done that day. I was done that day. And I parked illegally, walked into the school, ran into the school, like, waved to Cindy. Hi, Cindy. I have to go find Marlo.
Again.
They know the situation now, so they're just like, whenever Heather comes in, just let her come in. So I, like, find her in a random hall, and I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, what? I'm like, how many times have I told you to come to the car? I'm sorry. And so we get home, and I'm, like, rushing to answer, like, 4 emails that are, like, desperately needed to be answered. And I'm standing in the kitchen, and she starts. I'm not proud of this, by the way. I'm not.
Oh, wow. All right, let's do it.
I am not proud of this, but I am frantically trying to get these emails. And again, you know what it's like. Email is not what pays the bills, right? Work
right.
pays the bills. But you right. spend all of this time doing email. And it's so frustrating. So I'm frantically trying to get these emails responded to. And, like, I have to be upstairs because I have to direct her to do her homework. And then I have to be there just to, like, she needs the presence in the room. Like having a presence in the room helps her get her homework done.
Yep. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And I'm standing there answering email. And she starts squeaking Coco's toys to work Coco up.
Oh, God.
So I don't like to shovel snow, and I don't like to trick-or-treat. And the other thing that I hate most in this world is the noise that comes out of the dog when she gets worked up. It is so shrill and electrifying that my whole spine starts to, like, shake and almost break in half. I just like
a screeching bark howl.
Yeah, it's thing. More okay. of a, like, a it's not even a bark. It's a, like, but, like, turn that up, like, to, like, 1,000.
Oh,
she screams, and I just, like, slammed my fist on the countertop, and I was like, Marlo, and she looks at me, and she's like, what? And I was like, do you remember the mom from 2 years ago? She's back. Hello.
Oh, wow.
And I just needed to calm down. So I texted my mom and I'm like, calm me down. Like, I have to get through this day. Please get me through this day. I need to get through this day. This pace for the last 5 weeks of my life has been so relentless that I don't know how to catch my breath. And I apologized to her afterward, and everything was fine. But my mother agreed. And this is sort of the same, like, going back to Lexton and his performance in biology. Like, my mother even agreed with me. She's like, we indulge her. Like, she just knows that we're going to wait until she comes out of the building. I say, tell her that she's got 5 minutes. And if she doesn't come in 5 minutes, you're gone. And she walks on by herself. Like, yeah. That was my mother's idea. My mother. The most, like, fucking indulgent, amazing, compassionate person in the world. She was like, leave her there. Tell her 5 minutes or leave. So that's the new rule, is this, she doesn't come out by 3:05, we're done.
And has she come out?
Well, it started on Monday.
Okay. And today's a school day, so.
And Cammie is in town for Lita's birthday, which was on, oh yeah, Lita turned 15, by the way.
In addition to everything else, happy birthday, Lita.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was a thing. So Cammie actually walked down and picked her up because I was recording my book. And then yesterday she did the same thing because I was recording my book. And then today's a snow day. So, yeah. So Lita turned 15. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So it's been a lot. I do think your mom is spot on.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of parents end up doing. Not intentionally, but you kind of fall into a pattern so you don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. Because she's right. Like, Marlo knows if you wait for 10 minutes, if she waits for 10 minutes, you'll be there. If she waits for a half an hour, you're going to be there.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before. It's the same as anything else. Like, if you knew you could go to your job and surf the web and put your feet up and do whatever you wanted and still get paid and no one cared, you don't really have any incentive to actually do your job. Or get a job if mm-hmm. that is your thing. And I think it's the same mentality. So if she realizes, like, essentially that every single moment doesn't revolve around whatever her next whim might be.
Right.
That could, I mean, I have a feeling you're going to end up leaving solo sometimes. Yep.
She's going to walk home alone.
Yep. And she's either going to hate it or she's going to realize it's not bad and then you just don't pick her up. And then that's fine. But either way, you're not waiting for 25 minutes wondering what she's doing.
Yeah. And not feeling bad about it.
Right.
She forgot her llama hat one day. We've talked about this before, like when they forget their lunch and all that shit. It was really cold and she forgot her llama hat and she was just like, can you bring it to me? And I was like, honey, I have got 4 appointments today and 2 conference calls. I cannot bring it to you. Sorry. You forgot it.
And there was probably a reminder thrown in there earlier in the day. I'm just guessing, like, that it probably happened. Mm-hmm. And it's hard too in a situation like that. Like, I can imagine someone listening to this and hearing that she wanders the halls and looks for old teachers to talk to. And, oh, that's super cute. And yeah, it is. But it's also a pain in the ass when it's like all the time. You know?
When you know that there are like 4 major emails, like somebody's interested in turning your book into a screenplay, like that kind of shit that you have to go home and like consider the answer to, like, you know, like you have this waiting for you at home and you're waiting for her to come out at school. And it's just like, dear God, help.
Well, but even though on the days, like, even if you had absolutely nothing to do, and this especially applies to you because of how much you love driving, the last place you want to be is sitting in a car, even if you have nothing to do. And I think it's also just the message that it sends, like, your time is not important to me, mm-hmm. so I don't care.
Yeah.
Not that like, Marlo is being malicious and intentional about it, but that is the signal that's being sent. Like, I know I'm supposed to be out here, but... Eh.
Like, this is something that is learned. This is something that is learned, I think. Like, you have to understand that when you do this, you are infringing on their time. You need to understand this. Like, my mother gets so frustrated. She picks her up on the days that she takes Lita to dance. And she's like, there are times when I go into the school and I can't even find her.
Yep.
So we even stated the rule, like, again, you know, you're just figuring out parenthood.
Again.
Again.
And then when that doesn't work, then we'll just figure it out again.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all it's about. It's just like constantly reinventing the way you see the world because of these small people.
Because of these small people, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. Because the reality is, like, even if you say 5 minutes and then you're leaving, our world still revolves around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that won't change.
No.
It can't.
No. God. And then, you know, like, I wrote a little bit about this on the photo that I posted on Instagram. Like, we made Lita waffles for breakfast. That's what she wanted. Waffles and bacon and syrup and all that sort of stuff. And she wanted to hear, like, she's super, super into the music that I listen to. And I listened to a certain song by Stars on the way to the airport. I have my baby
like always,
in a hanger.
This is something you do.
I listened to a certain song by Stars on the drive to the hospital. And then during like the worst months of my postpartum, Ayers Walkie Talkie. I don't know if you know that album.
I don't know.
It's a phenomenal album. They are from Versailles, a French electronic band.
Okay.
I would turn on that album and it would soothe her when she was very little. And I'm just sitting there talking to her at breakfast, like having these really in-depth, deep conversations. And it like just fucking struck me like, holy fucking shit. Like, I have this human being, this fully formed human being sitting here that I was afraid wasn't going to walk. It's such a mind fuck when you consider it. Like, she's 15 years, 15.
You have a 15-year-old. I still have another month and a half.
She is wow. So jazzed to get her driver's permit. Like, she is like ready, like right now.
And when can they start?
They can start taking classes immediately at 15 if they get their permit 6 months before their 16th birthday. They can get the license on their birthday. So,
wow.
All she is so into, like, a lot of kids these days don't want to drive. Lita wants to drive. Lita wants to get out. She wants to go be free. She doesn't want to be limited. So, yeah.
You're going to have a driver. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I'm not ready for that. Good luck.
What do we do?
Oh man.
What do we do?
I don't know. I don't know if he's going to remember to look at traffic lights.
Exactly. Like, she's so absent-minded. Like, she will actually say to me with her glasses on her face, "Where are my glasses?" Like, and I love her.
Yep.
But then I think about her in a moving vehicle.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. And then I think of the people who have like 3 or 4 kids that are kind of all around the same age.
Oh my God.
That like one is in driver's ed, one already has their license, one's almost going to take, I don't know how you stay sane. To all of you out there who are in that position or were or will be, God, you're amazing for it. I have one and it's probably going to kill me. And it's still, I think he has to, I guess I should look, but I feel like it's more like 15 and a half here or something. So I don't remember.
Yeah.
Which could put him like around winter. So he could be doing it in the snow, which is not at all terrifying.
So to sort of bring this back full circle, see, I would stumble on words like that as I was reading the book. Circle. They ordered me lunch every day and I would sit down with the sound guy and he's like, you know, so you have two? And I was like, yeah, I have two girls. I said, do you have any? She's like, I have 4 girls. And I literally fell out of my chair. I literally like fell out of the chair onto the ground. I was like, what?
What is the age range?
His oldest is 25 and his youngest is 15. And I said to him, like, as I'm reading these chapters, like, I'm wondering what he's thinking. Like, what the fuck? He's like, what the fuck is this? Like, who the fuck wrote this book? But he talked about how, you know, yeah, it's a thing. Girls are a thing. And I gave the book to the lead anesthesiologist of the study. And he read it in a day and had been sending me text messages as he was reading it. And he was just like, what this has taught me, and I'm only saying this because it just means so much to me. He's like, what this has taught me is that my words carry so much weight, and you showed me like the human side of what I'm doing. Like, I'm so into the technical aspects of the research that I see that I have patients who have families and friends and that their lives are affected by this. And he was like, I can't tell you how much this means to me that you've done this. And I got that yesterday. I got that text yesterday right before I went into record.
Oh, so that didn't help.
I'm already an emotional mess. And I walk in and I have a black eye and the...
Oh, man.
I walk in, I have a black eye, and the sound technician was like, hey, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. Everything is fine. I'm good. Let's go. Let's do this.
I always, because I say that, I like all the time, I'll just say it's fine, everything's fine. And I always think of that gif of like the dog sitting at a table drinking coffee and the whole entire room is burning. It just says everything's fine, like always, because it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what it is.
And I mean, I could totally go around saying, yeah, somebody beat me, when in actuality, I parked my car on an incline and slipped on some ice as I was getting out and literally hit my eye on the corner of the door of my car.
Oh my God, of course. Oh man.
And I was like, oh, that hurt. Not realizing that it was like, I have like pierced, like punctured the whole left of my eye is black.
The universe isn't going to make this shit easy for you.
Mm-mm.
That's for damn sure. Any time would be nice though. Like, things could change, you know, but that kind of feedback from the lead doctor.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
It was good. It's really good. I'm encouraged. And that's what I'm holding on to right now. There's a lot of work to be done before it comes out. And if any listeners out there who is interested in the book, I'm going to be sending out some email and offering deleted scenes, that sort of thing. There's some incentives coming up. So yeah, maybe I'll even take a picture of my black eye and send it out.
Oh, there we go. Everyone needs that. Yeah. That's a hell of a reward.
Yeah.
But if anyone has any suggestions for maybe keeping kids on the road or just, you know, helping them remember how to be human.
How to like look both awesome. Ways at a stop sign. Yeah. Right.
That'd be great. We're both very interested in that.
Oh, I'm supposed to stop at a red light. Oh, oops.
Oh damn. You can email us to stories@manicramblings.com, or you can find us on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @manicramblings, and of course on Patreon. And a huge thanks to our new patrons. It means a lot. You are really helping keep this going, so that's awesome.
Yes, thank you. Until next time. God, we rambled quite a bit. Fuck.
We really did, yeah.
We really did. That was a rambling episode, guys. Until next time. Until next time, make sure you're prepared and you're snowed in. And if you need any help with that,
Find a Mormon.
Many thanks to Tan Lines for the soundtrack, to Lisa Congdon for the cover art, and to Ryan Coomer for his expertise with the editing stuff.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.